We're kicking off Mental Health Week. We're calling our series this spring Thinking Outside the Box. We're looking at some different kinds of therapies in the treatment of mental illness and when they might be used, how we can debunk some mythology perhaps about some of them, and give people an idea about some of the options that are out there. Joining us this morning on the telephone is Dr. Micheline Stavermer. She is a psychiatrist with the St. Luke System. Dr. Stavermer, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
One of the mental health treatment options that's been around for a long time, and unfortunately people have so many preconceived notions about it, how do you talk to people about a therapy, ECT, which is short for electroconvulsive therapy? How do you talk to people about a therapy that, first of all, has convulsive as part of its name, and secondly, has been a staple in horror movies for decades?
Well, so usually I start off with talking to them about what hasn't worked for patients. So in treatment refractory depression, with people who just don't seem to get better on our standard antidepressant regimens and even some of our augmenting agents that we add on, if those continue to not work, I'll generally talk to them about alternative therapies, and electroconvulsive therapy is one of those. I do talk to them sometimes about some of the myths behind it and about how, you know, it's been portrayed in media previously and how it's nothing like it's portrayed in the media. Generally, I also talk about how effective it is. They've done studies that have shown it's up to 80% effective for people with treatment-resistant depression, and that's almost double the rate of remission that we see with people using standard antidepressant therapies. So for regular antidepressant medications, it's only about 40%.
So this
is extremely effective. Yep. And
there have been a lot of changes also in the way that the therapy has evolved. Well, like everything else, the therapy has evolved, and it's not the same kind of therapy, perhaps, that they were using in the 30s or 40s. Can you talk about some of those changes?
One of the biggest changes has been the use of anesthesia with ECT, and generally it's about the same as you would get for any general procedure that you'd have for surgery. So they give you a muscle relaxant, so any of the pain that you might have from the treatment is essentially alleviated because your muscles don't tense up during it. We also breathe for you. You won't remember the actual treatment itself because you're asleep, essentially, for it. We give people pain medications, so that alleviates some of the other side effects as well. So essentially, it's basically like having general anesthesia and, you know, like having a surgical process without actually having.
So, yeah, like a surgery, but without the knives. That's always a good thing.
Yep.
So how does it work? What happens when you undergo an ECT treatment, and how does it make your brain work better?
So what we do is we use electricity to induce a seizure. And there are three different theories about how this is helpful for people. One of those is that the seizure itself is somehow therapeutic. One of the other theories is that in severe depression, there's disturbed hormonal secretion, especially in like cortisol and some other neurohormones. And so the thought is that by inducing the seizure, we actually kind of right that disturbance. And then one of the other theories is that the seizure itself helps induce something called neurotrophic effects. So basically, it allows your brain to create better connections between the cells or neurons in the brain, and that helps form kind of new neural pathways, where in depression, your brain may have been taking one neural pathway. This helps it take a healthier pathway.
Well, and there's also been conversation, as I understand, that the longer you are depressed, the more your brain kind of gets into that depression rut.
Yes.
Not only in the terms of the thoughts that you're thinking that you're aware of, but also perhaps things going on in your brain that you're not consciously aware of.
Yep. And there's been a lot more research coming out about that and about depression and, like I had mentioned before, the neural pathways. So basically, when you have a thought, your brain sends electrical stimuli through certain pathways. And the thought, some of the thoughts emerging in research is that in depression, you're using certain neural pathways that aren't as healthy and that kind of propagate the depression. And as you use those more and more, they become the default pathways. And so the thought is that ECT might help you go to a healthier pathway instead of using that old neural pathway that might not have been as healthy.
I've known some folks that have undergone this therapy, and one person in particular really felt that it had helped a lot. They did talk a little bit about some light memory loss, mm-hmm. but of course, if you're kind of expecting that, if you're told that it's a side effect, it would be interesting to find out, are you really forgetting things, or are you just worried that you're going to forget things? Yeah. And of course, when you hit a certain age, you forget things anyway. What about the side effects now for the modern version of ECT?
So memory loss we do still talk about as a side effect. There are three different placements that we do of the electrodes for ECT. One of those is bilateral, one of those is so basically on your temples, one of those is bifrontal or above your eyes, and then the other one is called right unilateral, so basically it focuses on the right side of your brain. So a lot of times we'll try and use right unilateral because it has less memory loss associated with it. They've also changed the actual machine and how it conducts electricity, and so we use something called ultra brief pulse at our facility, where that also leads to less memory loss because you aren't introducing the electricity for as long a period of time. But memory loss is technically a side effect of it. A lot of times it's seen mostly around the time of the treatment, so they might not remember much of the day. But I've also had patients who wake up from anesthesia and essentially remember everything other than when they were asleep during that time period. So they remember, you know, before the treatment when they were getting their IV and things, and then they remember after, immediately after the treatment.
So is it kind of, does the memory loss go away after time?
It can. For most people, it does. For most, I've never really seen where people haven't come back from the memory loss, although it is definitely a possibility, which we have to warn people about, but generally that's not the case.
So if folks have perhaps been going to a therapist, taking their meds, doing their work, and they're really still stuck in this place of despair, this might be a therapy that might be recommended by their practitioners.
Absolutely. I think it's a great option for people, and they've actually recommended it almost as third line after a few failures of antidepressants.
Well, it could certainly eliminate a lot of the time that people spend stuck in that despairing place.
Absolutely.
Dr. Stivermer, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. What a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Dr. Micheline Stivermer, our guest this morning. She is a psychiatrist with the St. Luke's System, and she joined us this morning as part of our spring mental health series called Thinking Outside the Box.